Welcome to episode 89 of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. It's been an interesting week with a lot of positives, but equally, there have been a number of frustrations at the hands of both new and existing clients. Of course, that's just business, but recent events immediately reminded me of a recording I made some time ago with photographer-writer Hugh Graham, who a lot of you will know was one of my lecturers when I studied photography at university. In this week's show then, we're talking about litigation and the fine art of just how photographers can keep their customers happy. So, welcome, one and all, to The Active Photographer, episode 89. So, with cup of tea in hand, once again I am speaking with Hugh Graham, who is my one-time lecturer at university and our one-time colleague. We worked together in the past. And the topic of debate today is litigation. And specifically, how, as a photographer, you keep your clients happy, even when, in spite of everything, it is quite clear that perhaps they are maybe not in the right, and the old cliche is that the customer is never wrong. Hugh, what's your opening gambit on this?
When times are tough and people are trying to squeeze the last penny out of a pound, and if they are under the hammer financially themselves, people often behave with uncharacteristic dishonesty. And you may remember a wonderful lecture, and it was wonderful.
lecture too.
I gave, but I said, when you start off in business on your own, it's important to remember that you can only be totally screwed by someone you totally trust.
Absolutely.
And if you think about it, when you're in business, you protect yourself automatically, because when as a new customer you do all the checks that you should do, and it's, you only relax your guard when trust has been built up over a period of 2, 3, 4, or in my case 9 years before I got totally screwed by a client I totally trusted. Only I went down for 38k, and since that was 24 years ago, I suppose that must be the thick end of a quarter of a million now.
And on that occasion, was it, I mean, one would automatically assume you'd say that it was, you believed you were in the right, or whatever the agreement was. Was it a case that no middle ground could be met?
Well, nothing to do with that. He went bust.
Oh, right. Oh,
he went bust, owed me 38,000.
That's a lot to...
I owed the printer, I owed the printer involved at that time, 24,000. So we went bust as well.
So how did you broach that subject with the printer? Because it is that chain of business where someone relies on someone else, and equally it affects everyone completely down the chain. So how presumably you had a good working relationship with the printer before
over,
that?
Over about 9 years.
Right. So how did you broach that? Did you say, I'm terribly sorry, this is a situation?
Well, that's exactly how I broached it. I said, you know, I'm afraid that I have not been paid by my client, therefore I can't pay you. And he said, well, what were you charging him? I said, I was charging him 38,000. He said, on top of my 24. And I said, well, yes, but then I had to do all the design, I had to do all the artwork, I had to do all the photography, I had to attend all the meetings to get to this point, I had to pay copywriters and all the rest of it. So I said, it wasn't as though that differential was all profit. I said, I suppose if I was lucky, I was making perhaps 3,500, so it's 10% of the total bill.
Yeah.
So I said, no one was screwing anybody.
And it's, I suppose it's tricky knowing, because there's always more than one way that a scenario can pan out, and no one likes to get into, well, okay, some people like to have heated debates, that's their nature, but no one very often no one likes to get into a confrontational situation.
I don't think anybody does any good with confrontation. I think that it automatically gets explosive. As soon as you confront the situation aggressively, then the whole drama escalates. And then both sides start to say things that they wouldn't normally say. And what started out as a perfectly good relationship deteriorates to a point where people won't speak to one another.
And I think, I mean, I've experienced firsthand where, for example, a local marketing company used to give me a lot of work, and we've never fallen out. They've always been very happy with the work. But when I met with them recently and we were just having a chat over a drink, they said, look, really sorry, I haven't got any work for you at the moment because people are doing the photography themselves, trying to cut their marketing budgets. It's always a shame when those relationships that are long established kind of break down, I think.
It is, but it's unavoidable because when people are pressured for money themselves, they start to buy not on quality but on price. And I've looked at some pictures. I said, you know, I used to run a very successful wedding photography company after my retirement. But I said it was quite funny. People are now ringing up and saying, well, we like your pictures, we want you to do the photographs, but we can't afford you. So then they get Uncle George with his dreadful Canon, whatever it may be, or his equally, even worse, Nikon, whatever it may be.
I was waiting for that.
to actually take the pictures. And then they come back 4 weeks later and say, Uncle George's pictures weren't really very good. Is there anything you could do with them? I understand you can do wonderful things with Photoshop. At which point, I show great restraint and don't tell them to F off. and really say that I'm afraid it's the pictures are so bad it's beyond my capability to do anything with them.
But again, that is the difference between, as I say, we won't hark on about this now, but the difference between someone calling themselves a photographer and actually being a professional photographer, which we know encapsulates everything to do with the admin, the people skills, the collaborations, the arrangement of everything. That is, again, I think photography is, especially now when people are trying to turn a quick buck to get an extra income, people are still seeing photography as being a glamorous sideline that they can do. But you and I both know that it turns anything but glamorous when you've got someone that, even though you know that they're kind of being a bit overreacting to something or kind of being not, they haven't realised something or picked up on something or haven't read, say, an email, that you have to have that diplomacy has to kick in and you have to bite your tongue. And you might be thinking, this guy's an absolute idiot, but we're not going to tell him that. We're going to let him think that he has, you know, got the best deal, because it's all about keeping people happy, which has always been the same whether you've been local greengrocer selling produce or you're running a marketing company or a newspaper.
Well, I think one of the more humorous aspects of our relationship is that you are a qualified photographer and I'm not. So you have a degree in photography, I really taught you.
So when I'm 100...
I said, no one actually taught me, I taught myself.
So does that mean that when I'm 130 like you are, that I'm going to have some pipsqueak come in talking to me for all my wisdom and actually I'll say, well, go away, you're more qualified than I am.
Well, exactly. So, I mean, the reality is that you have a degree in photography, I am merely a doctor of philosophy. It is, and I have no photographic qualifications at all, other than the fact that I've been doing it for 30 years.
But I remember, I mean, my degree, that there are degree programmes in the country that you can take where they have a core component of the photography degree, which is the business skills. You know, once we kick you out of this after 3 years and you've got to, on the basis that you are going to start up as a photographer, here's some core skills. Now, you're giving me a funny look because we both know that actually there was nothing about that when I was at university. And the great majority of universities in the UK don't teach photography degrees that have that built in. It's all about the glamour, going to London, say, working for some glossy magazine and making your fortune. But when it comes, they don't say, okay, so if you shoot the best set of pictures that's ever been known, and they are technically perfect, they're saying the right message, but the model says, oh, I don't like the way my eyebrow looks at that, and it's up against deadline, it has to go to press, and they kick off in a big fuss. They don't tell you how you deal with that, or how you say, okay, this one, someone has paid me £1,000, how do you get, they want their money back, but you know you're not at liberty to give it back. How you compromise.
I can remember when I was lecturing at your university, I got into terrible trouble because I was did a whole series of lectures on what life in the real world was
working
like.
As a freelance.
Yeah.
I was actually dissuaded, or we as a year group, and I think it was about 30, we graduated, I think, with about 34 in our end of course. We were dissuaded from taking not just yours, but any of these what we would now perceive as being real world classes, which is just bizarre. It's like, wouldn't you rather go off and go and do the fine art component or something?
Well, fine art photography is wonderful, provided you are determined to stay bankrupt.
did I ever tell you, this is maybe slightly off topic, I was a pretty good student. I was hardworking and got a pretty good grade and all the rest of it. But at the kind of, I know, smallest violin in the world, I got no thanks for it. At the kind of the debrief, you know, after we graduated, one of our tutors had a meeting with her, and she said, so what are you going to do now? Now, I must have been quite unique on that course, because I said, I'm going to be a photographer. So she kind of just looked at me with a kind of quite dismissive sort of, are you sure? Kind of, you know, maybe she didn't see my technical abilities. But I always remember she said, okay, well, I think you should do an MA. And so go and be a photographer for a year and then come back and do your MA with us.
Why?
Because they wanted to keep students under their roof, paying their fees and getting good students to be giving good statistics, I guess. But as I say, that's not what I bought into. That's not what I wanted to do.
Well, how many of your contemporaries, of which there were about 99, are still in photography?
Oh, very few. Less than 10%, I should imagine.
Okay. So that means that the average university graduate is hardly ever working in the discipline which he was studying.
So, I mean, just bringing it back...
I think we're straying from the point.
I was going to say, bring it back to the topic. Let's off the back of that, these people that are trying to make a go of it still,
mm-hmm.
and we're talking 11 years down the line or something,
mm-hmm.
they are more so now than ever, perhaps, where people are tightening their purse strings and are...
Oh, it's far worse than that, John. People have become litigious. And by that I mean that they are determined to screw the supplier of whether it be a product or service for the last ounce of whatever it is they can get out of any particular situation. So, photographers, it's not just photographers, it's anybody, need to protect themselves with terms of condition which it's quite clear the client has to sign. And they have to sign that they have understood what the terms of conditions are, and that the client actually has to have read them. And you, as a supplier, have to prove that they have read them. And then, when you actually agree what is to be done, you then have to make quite sure that what is to be done is agreed in writing, so that you have a written brief, so that you can translate that brief, so there's no doubt about what you are being paid to do and what you are being paid to do it for, and how much you're going to be paid for doing it. Having done it, you then have to supply supply whatever it is you're supplying to your client. And if you're wise, because this can come back and snap you in the heels 3.5 years later if you're not careful, they then have to sign that they have approved and accepted the work. If you don't do all of that, you are leaving yourself wide open to all forms of litigation.
And it's interesting, I was talking to someone the other day who was wanting to, or thinking about a career in photography and what have you, and, you know, we talk about the usual things, but I said, well, have you thought about insurance? So I think the theory was, I haven't really got much camera gear. I've only got one camera and a lens. I don't need to insure it. I said, well, not just your kit, because that, if that's all you've got, you could probably put it on your household insurance. But in terms of professional insurance, protecting yourself when you're on location, when you're working, if people do turn around and threaten legal action, have you even thought about that? And a lot of people coming out of university, or not even coming out of university, people that are trying to make some extra money on the side through their love of photography, which had always been a hobby, they don't think to do that. And I think that's one of the dangers at the moment, is that people that are calling themselves photographers, yes, they take very good pictures, and for most people, that's what, as a client, that's what essentially what you're wanting, certainly to begin with. They haven't got the, it's almost the security. If I was as a client, I'd want the security to know that someone is clued up enough that it protects everyone involved, right down to model release forms.
Charles, the photographer, the working photographer, the actual working active photographer, if he's wise, or she is wise, because some of your active photographers must be ladies as well, needs four sorts of insurance. The first insurance you need is yourself, so that if you are injured or damaged, your income at a previously agreed level continues until you are better. That's if you fall and break a leg or do something nasty or whatever. So the second thing is you have to insure your kit. You then have to insure yourself and anybody who works for you for third-party claims if you drop a camera on someone's head from St. Paul's Cathedral or whatever it may be. And finally, you need professional indemnity insurance that if you make a cobblers of whatever it is, in the opinion of the client, for whatever it is, then you have insurance which will actually pay out whatever is agreed. So actually, you also need legal insurances. That's five.
Because I remember from some years ago, you and I both knew of someone who they were trying to cut corners, or thought, oh, that's not necessary, or save a few pennies this month, what have you. They weren't covered, and I think they were a wedding photographer. I forget their name, and I certainly wouldn't mention it now if I did remember. But they weren't covered, and they went out of business overnight because the client took them to court, and it was a lot of money that was involved, and they just went out of business overnight.
It was a photographer in Essex, and what he'd done was he didn't have professional indemnity insurance. He wasn't a limited liability company, it was just himself. He got no form of protection at all. He shot a wedding of an extremely wealthy family, and through no fault of his own, the film in the laboratory was put through the... And of course, it shows you how long ago it was, but we're talking about film now, because it couldn't happen now. But he said the film was put through the fixer before the developer, and wiped all the images that the guy had shot. Now, it wasn't his fault.
No. I mean, you could wipe your memory cards.
Yeah. But the photographer was sued by the family, not only for the money they paid up front, but for the drama and harassment. And I said, in those days, and we're going back 25 years ago, it was a county wedding, and he got done for 25K. £25,000 at that point would have bought three normal sized houses. So it was, I mean, the guy went bust.
Yeah.
I mean, he went bust individually because he couldn't afford to pay it.
And I think people at the moment are charging less and less for services as a photographer in all avenues of business, but certainly in photography.
Yeah, but hang on, not only are the fees they're earning less and less, but clients are expecting more and more for the money. But so if, they're being squeezed at both ends.
But if someone is charging so little, and someone's saying, I'm going to make do just for now and what have you, they're kind of and I've got personal experience of this from recent weeks, where I quoted out to someone I've known for a long time, and they liked the idea, the behind the shots and all the rest of it, but at the end of the day they said, you know what, we're going to go somewhere a bit cheaper, which is fair enough, people are allowed to. But if that person the photographer had made some sort of a big error and they weren't happy with the pictures, you have to wonder, they would probably, you know, quite rightly say, I'm not happy with the pictures, what are you going to do to sort it out? But they, I would imagine they wouldn't necessarily think, well, hang on, we didn't go with the person which was slightly more, which would have maybe given us a more professional service. But they're kind of, all, do you think therefore they don't have a leg to stand on, or it's just an unfortunate situation because people are going for the cheaper prices now?
I think people are, many small businesses are buying on price alone and not on quality. So that's the first problem. The second problem is often when the photography is undertaken, it's shot under time constraints.
Mm.
So the client could then bring an action because the photography failed to allow him to perhaps take part in an exhibition, produce leaflets on time. It might be alleged that because the photographer hadn't delivered acceptable work, that they brought the company to the level of liquidation, perhaps. I said there were all sorts of things that could go wrong. But if it isn't, if there is not a time constraint, then I don't think the client has a leg to stand on.
I remember one occasion there was a bride who, do you remember, I was helping you on this occasion with a wedding, I forget exactly where it was, very attractive couple, very attractive location with all the hills behind them, it was very nice, lovely day, everything went very smoothly, certainly up until the point that we left. They were very delighted with the pictures because we, at that time, we were already shooting digital, so they could see the pictures as we went. And it was only in recent months where it became very apparent that their ideas of what they wanted were not realistic with their budget. And then it was, I think, didn't she mention something about, oh, my hair doesn't look right or something? And it was a blustery day. And I specifically remember us saying, because I was just I think I was shooting pictures, but at that particular moment, I was assisting you to make sure that the dress was right and you know, we had a bit of cover from the trees or whatever it might have been. There was nothing more anyone could have done. And we actually said at that point, would you rather go over there where it's a bit more sheltered, or, you know, this is nice with the background here, but this is a bit more sheltered. And they said, no, we want the pictures there. So they actually, I mean, you know, were your words against mine sort of thing. But they came back and complained about her hair because of
wind.
And we had done everything at the time to safeguard that they were happy. But it came down to them trying to get, not spend as much money after the event.
Perhaps you also remember that wonderful occasion when we were waiting for 45 minutes because the bride's mother had disappeared.
Oh, yes. She went to feed the cat.
No, that was another one. Captain the Parrot.
Oh, Captain the Parrot, yeah.
So this silly woman had gone off without telling anybody. No. So we spent 45 minutes trying to find this non-existent lady. And then someone said, oh, but a car's gone from the car park. And she arrived at that point in a flurry to say, sorry, she just realised that Captain, who had turned out to be the family parrot, had not been fed that morning.
Meantime, there were 250 people waiting for the photograph. Yeah.
And then, of course, we were under a huge time constraint to get the pictures done in time before the wedding breakfast started. And they then had the nerve to moan afterwards about the fact that one or two standard situations, which they agreed had to be dropped, weren't shot. So it's tremendously important that the client and the photographer both understand what is expected for the service being provided and purchased.
And I think that, just to wrap this up, I think that is a very good point, in that it's like with anything, as long as you know what your expectations should be and you know, in a monetary sense, how much is involved, time constraints, turnaround time, all these things. Like you say, if it's on paper and everyone signs it off and they know where they stand, then there should be no issue, short of the service provider not doing what they are being paid to do.
Let me give you an example. My terms and conditions state quite clearly that when I go off to photograph a wedding, for example, I get my fee paid up front. If I don't get it paid up front, I don't go and take the pictures. It's quite simple.
Mm. Mm.
However, I live on a peninsula. There is only one road off that peninsula. If that road gets jammed with one of these 32 wheelers having gone across the road, I can't get off the peninsula,
mm.
which might cause me to either be so late that I miss the ceremony,
mm.
or I might not even be able to turn out at all,
mm.
because the road would be completely blocked and it would be impossible for me to get to the wedding.
And there's only so much you can second guess that sort of thing by allowing enough time.
And of course, exactly the same thing could happen. You could be driving up to a wedding on the motorway. There could be a huge pile up on the motorway. You can't back off. You can't get to an exit. So you're just stuck. Mm. And you could be stuck there for 4 or 5 hours.
Mm.
By which time, not only will the wedding be over, the bride might have gone off on honeymoon.
Now, a lot of people listening will say, well, surely you'd have a phone number. You can make a call. But actually, that's good and that's professional and polite, you know, to say, just to let you know, I am on my way, but this has happened. But that's still not going to get you a turn off on the motorway.
If all that happens, it's sod's law at that point that you're in a blind spot.
Mm.
So you can't make the call.
Mm.
So my terms of business say quite clearly that if I am unable to turn up for whatever reason, it shall be agreed by the client that the limit of my liability shall be the return of any money paid in advance. Mm. And if they won't sign it, I won't do it.
Mm, yeah. Funnily enough, and we'll make this the last point, I was talking to someone this morning about some portraiture, and I said, look, any sort of shoot that I do that involves models, what have you, the standard paperwork is the model release. It makes sure that everyone is as aware of how the pictures are going to be used and what have you. And I said to him, this is a potential new client and through someone that I know through business, and I said, look, the simple thing is, if they're not happy to sign that paperwork, I'm not happy to shoot it, because it's not just protecting me, it's protecting them and third parties that are involved in the following weeks and months. So I think the moral is, get yourself protected, be polite and professional, but just have your wits about you, and hopefully situations can be not just resolved but amicably you know, sort of draw a line under them and everyone is happy with the outcome.
Yeah, we call them model release form. In the days when I was actually using them, we used to call them blood jits. I can remember shooting a wonderful picture looking out over a valley of a girl who was sitting with her back towards the camera with her head in her hands, and she was gazing at her. It was a sort of three-quarter profile shot, and down behind on the valley, there was cows grazing on the valley slopes and so on. It was a beautiful, emotional photograph, and it was used 4 years later as a result of an agency picking it up, and it was used and published in the magazine for an article about people contemplating suicide. Now, fortunately for me, it was impossible to recognise the girl.
Mm.
But the girl who had been the model in that photograph had seen the picture, she would have been appalled, and so would her family.
Mm.
So you need to be awfully careful about all this, because once you put your pictures into a stock library, you have no control over who buys them and how they're going to be used.
Mm. Mm. And
a blood jit is absolutely vital if there is any possibility of the person in the photograph being recognised by either people, by members of their family, or by people who know them well.
Mm. And good libraries do ask you to state yes or no, do you have releases for this building, for these people,
right,
what have you.
But those releases aren't bulletproof.
No.
They're just helpful.
Yeah. Hugh, once again, thank you very much for your insights. Again, guys listening, if you want to ask any questions, all the information's coming up. Again, Hugh, thank you very much indeed.
Right.
It was something of a happy accident that I remembered that recording, given this past week's activities, and a timely reminder, I think, of the need to ensure that all paperwork and safeguards are up to date and in place. You can check out all the show notes to this and other week's shows at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget I'm on Twitter, at Giles Babbage. There's the Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or, of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, have a great week, and I will speak to you all very soon.
Member of the CurrentPhotographer.com podcast network. Find more great photography shows at CurrentPhotographer.com/podcast.